So I'll be honest with you, up until watching this film, I thought that American football looked really boring. Actually, having watched this, I did a little bit of research online, and it's a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be. I don't know whether anybody else interested in American football, or football as they call it. Bit of American football, I don't know. I don't even know whether it gets shown on any channels. Yeah, probably does. Sky, something like that. Oh, maybe we'll have to watch a match, because I thought it was really interesting. I was quite surprised. So, match, game. It's all the same, isn't it? Football, American football. I mean, what's the difference? So, The Blind Side. It's a film about a Christian couple, a Christian family, who basically, the long and short of it, is they adopt this homeless boy, put him through school, help him to get his grades and get a football, or as we call it, an American football scholarship at a university, which I believe is what they call a college in America. So he's going to university and through a American football scholarship. Does that make sense? Yeah. Or he's going to college for a football scholarship, if you're American. So this film's about this this lady called Leanne Tui, which is quite an unusual name. Tui, I think is how you pronounce it. And she's played by Sandra Bullock. And she's the main character through this film. And the film is really about kind of how she takes this boy and helps him. So we're going to plunge ourselves back into darkness, because I wanted to start off by showing you just one more clip. And this is the moment that she decides to take Michael, or as Big Mike as everyone else calls him, into the family home. So just watch the screen for a moment.
Step 4. Big Mike. Hey, my name's Leanne Tui. My kids go to Wingate. You said you were going to the gym? School gym's closed. Why were you going to the gym? Big Mike, why were you going to the gym?
Because it's warm.
Do you have any place to stay tonight? Don't you dare lie to me.
Seen that look many times. She's about to get her way.
Come on.
So before we even get started, let's just unpack that scene a little bit. Moments before that scene took place, they're driving along and they see Big Mike walking along, and it's raining and he's drenched and he's carrying a carrier bag in his hand, which we later find out is the only clothes that he owns. And he's walking along the road. And let me just start by asking you a question. How many of you might have just driven straight past? So that's what they do. They drive past. And a few moments later, Leanne has this feeling in her gut. And she tells her husband to pull over. So let me ask you another question. How many of you might have ignored that feeling in your gut? So she tells her husband to pull over. She says, turn the car around. And she pulls up alongside Big Mike, and she says, because previous to this, she said, where are you going? And he'd said, I'm going to the gym. And they'd left him be. So she turns around and says, why are you going to the gym? So she questions the first answer that Big Mike gave her. So let me ask you this. How many of you might have accepted the first answer that Big Mike gave you? So even when you pulled over, when you felt your gut and he says, I'm going to the gym, how many of you might have gone, okay, and let him walk past? But she doesn't. She challenges the first answer that he gave. And as we find in that clip, He wasn't telling the truth. He didn't have a place to go. He was trying to cover up the fact that he didn't have a home. He was going to the gym because it was warm. He had nowhere else to stay. So then she says to him, another question. Do you have a place to stay tonight? And he says, yes. So let me ask you again. At that point, how many of you might have gone, okay, you got a place to stay? But she doesn't. She says, don't you lie to me. And she asks him again, have you got a place to stay? And this time, he says no. And then she has this dilemma of what do I now do? Do I leave it? I now know that this boy has nowhere to stay tonight. His only option was to go to the gym because it was warm. And at that point, maybe she's thinking, what's my husband going to say when I turn around and say that this complete stranger is going to stay in our house with our kids? How many of you might have stopped at that point? But she doesn't. She carries on. And she goes over to the car and she gets in the car. And by this point, we all saw that presumably her husband's quite used to her getting her own way. So he doesn't argue. He doesn't contest it. He goes, yeah, all right, love. Get him in the car. Let's go home. And Big Mike gets in the car and they drive to the family home and the scene ends. How many times during that one scene was Leanne given an opportunity to walk away? The first time, the moment she drove past, the moment she decided whether to trust her gut, the moment she turned round and pulled over, the moment that he told her he was going to the gym, the moment he said he had a place to live, the moment she asked him again, the moment she thought in that split second, what do I say to my husband? That's 8 opportunities for her to go, okay, not my problem. How many of you would have pushed through all 8 of those circumstances and taken that boy in? Because I can honestly say I don't think I would have done. Maybe I might have asked the first couple of questions and maybe I would have thought, hey, he's got somewhere to stay, fine. How many of you would have pushed on through all 8 to end up taking that boy in? Because although in real life, the circumstances were slightly different to what was portrayed in the film. I watched an interview with the real family, and actually the first time they stopped him in real life, they didn't take him home that night. He stayed somewhere else. They found somewhere else for him to stay, and it was maybe a few days later that they decided to invite him into their home. So things slightly changed in the film. But the reality is, I bet there are not many of us who would have done all of those things in the same way that Sandra Bullock's character did in that one scene. You see, she saw a need and she knew that she needed to meet it. She couldn't let him go to the gym. She couldn't let him be cold. She couldn't let him be homeless. Instead, she took him into their house and she gave him a sofa to sleep on. And as the film progresses, she gives him his own room. I'll be honest with you, I cry quite a lot of films, and I cried at the bit where he said he'd never had a bed. Yeah. So she takes him in, not just for one night, but ends up adopting him because they need to get the papers in place for him to get a driving license. When I watch this film, it reminds me of some of the kids that I've taught over the years and the broken situations that they've come from. And to be honest with you, it reminds me of how many kids I've not been able to help. Because they're already being dealt with in the system. And that breaks my heart. So as I was thinking about what I wanted to bring to you this morning, the one thing that stood out to me is a story that Jesus tells. and it's in Luke chapter 10, starting at verse 25, and it's the story of the Good Samaritan. And I want to read this to you now. It says, on one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What is written in the law? He replied. How do you read it? He answered. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. You have answered correctly, Jesus said. Do this and you will live. But he wanted to justify himself. So he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? And Jesus tells this story. And he says, in reply, Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. When he fell into the hands of robbers, they stripped him of his clothes. They beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road. And when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was. And when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, took him to an inn and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and he gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said. And when I return, I will reimburse you for any expense you might have. Which of these 3 do you think was the neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Jesus told him, go and do likewise. So I want to ask you a question. Who is your neighbor? The question that was asked of Jesus. Was Big Mike Leanne's neighbor? In the practical sense of the word, they lived at opposite ends of their city. She lived in a very wealthy and affluent area. He lived in the complete opposite side of town. In fact, when she helps him and she takes him to his mother's house to pick up whatever clothes he has, she says, I've never even been into this part of town. They lived at opposite extremes, both physically in their city, but also in who they were, in their finances, in their family life, in everything about them, they were polar opposites. What I find really interesting in this passage is that the person that asks Jesus is an expert in the law. Yeah. So by today's standards, someone who knows what he's talking about, let's say by today's example that expert in the law is a lawyer. So when Jesus says these words, love your neighbor as yourself, the lawyer in him says, well, what's my neighbor? And we know that the mindset of that person when defending someone in court is to nitpick and pick apart the wording of the law to get their person off the hook. So when court cases go to law, it's the minute detail in the wording that is often the thing that either convicts someone or lets them go free. The technicality. And sometimes, whether or not it is right or wrong, the technicality is what the judge makes the decision on. So this expert in the law comes and asks the question, well, who is my neighbor? You see, he's picking apart the words that they've been taught. He's looking for a loophole, looking for a way of getting out of it. I love reading Matthew Henry's commentary of the Bible. So Matthew Henry is a very famous preacher, written loads of commentaries. And I was reading his commentary on Luke, and he refers to another famous minister called Dr. Lightfoot when talking about the phrasing in this verse. And it says this, where he says, you shall love your neighbor, he doesn't include all Gentiles, for they are not his neighbors. In fact, by that day's standards, only those people who were Israelites were classed as their neighbors. What that meant practically in the law is they would not necessarily put to death an Israelite for killing a Gentile. So a Jewish person killing a non-Jewish person because he was not his neighbor. They would say, not a good idea to go around killing Gentiles. So they'd say you shouldn't really do it, but they might not convict him because of the law. In fact, they might say, you shouldn't kill a Gentile if you're not at war with them. If you're at war with them, it's okay. You can kill them on the battlefield. But if you're not at war with them, you probably shouldn't. And that's kind of how it's worded. But here's another one. If as a Jew you see a Gentile who is in danger, you are under no obligation to help that person. Because by the law, they are not your neighbor. So pass by, walk on the other side of the road. Drive past. Not your problem. Not your neighbor. So when Jesus tells this story, it's not just a little story about who's my neighbor. It is Jesus telling a story that demonstrates to the Jewish expert who knows his law that actually no longer will there be a division between Jewish people and non-Jewish people where you can let them die when they're hurting themselves and you'll probably get away with it if you kill them. He says there is no longer any division between Jew and Gentile. They are all your neighbor. Sorry, I've just lost my train of thought. So I think what Jesus was bringing was a misconception at the time. And by no means am I attributing what we're talking about at the time of Jesus to modern day Jewish people. But at the time, he was addressing a misconception and changing what was taught in the law. So I think it's really important as a Christian that we understand who is our neighbor. Our neighbor is everybody. Our neighbor is not the person that lives next to us. It's not the person just maybe that's part of our church. It is anybody that we come across. And it's so important that we understand that in the context of what Jesus is saying to actually then understand the message that Jesus brings when he tells that story. So what does it mean to love your neighbor as yourself, which is what Jesus then goes on to say? Well, to look at that film, let's look at some of the things that Leanne does to love her neighbor, Big Mike, as herself. She takes him in. She opens up her home to a complete stranger. There's a moment in the film where she's laying in bed, sat with her husband, and she says, have I done the right thing letting a complete stranger into my home? In fact, there are people saying, is that a good idea? You know, you've let this big strapping lad into your home and you've got a young daughter. Is that a safe thing to be doing? And she has this moment of going, is it going to be all right? But she opens up her home to a stranger. She then starts to meet his needs practically. The first thing she does is drive him to his mum's house so he can pick up his stuff. Very practical thing. She puts herself out, goes into an area she's not comfortable with, has to interact with people that she's not maybe happy interacting with because she's scared of them. She defends him. Yeah. When people are being mean to him, she defends him. She clothes him. Turns out that there was nothing to collect from his parent, from his mum's house because it had been boarded up. So she takes him shopping and she buys him clothes. She feeds him. She even includes him in their family Christmas photograph. Yeah. Yeah. Doing all the other stuff, feeding, clothing, giving him somewhere to sleep. She might have still said, "That's all right, we're just going to have a family. You wait over there, have a cup of tea. We're going to have our family photo, and then we'll carry on with the day." But no, she includes him, even to the point as she wants him, in that family photo as a lifelong memory that he is part of the family. Yeah. She chooses to inconvenience her own family for the sake of Big Mike. There's one scene where they're sharing a Thanksgiving meal and they're watching sport on TV and all the family just grab some food and leg it back to the sofa and start shoveling food in while they're watching TV. And Michael, who's never had that, he walks through to the dining room with his plate and he sits at the dining room table. And because of that, she feels so convicted that she turns the telly off and she drags all the family in, lays the whole meal out and makes them, "You're all going to sit here, we're going to hold hands, we're going to say grace, and we're going to share this meal together at the table." She inconveniences her family for the sake of a stranger. She invests time and money into helping him. He needs help with his education. So she pays for a tutor to get his grade point average, as they call it in America, up to a suitable level. So she invests of her time, she invests of her finances to help this guy who's struggling. And she also, she invests her love. Yeah. And the love that she invests is showing him that he is valued and that he is loved and that he is appreciated. Let me ask you a question. I want you to do something for me. I want you to close your eyes. And I want you to imagine that you're in your bedroom and you're looking at your wardrobe. Maybe you've opened the doors. In our case, we slide the door open. And we're looking at my clothes. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take out all my clothes out of the wardrobe and I split them into two piles. I put all my very best clothes in one pile. And in the other pile, I put all the clothes that are a bit older, bit more worn out. Maybe you do the gardening in those clothes. Maybe do the decorating in those clothes. The older ones that come out when I'm slobbing around at home. And I've got two piles. Now imagine someone walks into your house who just happens to be exactly the same size as you. And they have nothing. I want to ask you a question. Which pile do you give them? Do you give them the old worn out pile of clothes because you think, "I don't need these anymore, I've got some nice ones, it's all right"? Or do you go, "Do you know what? I am going to give of myself and I'm going to give this person my best clothes"? You can open your eyes. Which do you give? Do you give your very best or do you give the stuff that you can go without? So how do we show God's love for people? I just want to tell you four things very quickly. Four ways that we can show God's love. The first one is this, through compassion. Right. Jesus was moved by compassion. Does it break your heart to see someone in need? Do you want to give the best of what you've got to help someone? Through sacrifice. Each member of that family sacrificed something of themselves to help Michael. I could list the things. I won't do that now. But maybe go back through that film. Watch that film again and look at the sacrifices that each family member make as they invite this stranger into their house. Through perseverance. When Michael started school, he was failing every class. But there was one teacher that said, "I can help him." And through perseverance, she goes on and she helps. She speaks to every one of his teachers. Yeah. And one by one, they all get on board and they all help. But I want to end with this. Happiness. You see, giving, sacrifice, perseverance, it doesn't need to make us miserable. In fact, we are told to be cheerful givers. The husband who I've barely mentioned this morning, Sean, says this, in real life, says this. Doesn't matter how big or small, but if you are giving with a cheerful heart, you'll want to do it again. Yeah. That was his outlook. Yeah. So as we draw this to a close, we should want to help people. We should show God's love by helping people. Yeah. We should have that compassion that Jesus gives us. And it will involve sacrifice. It might involve giving your best for somebody else. Right. It may involve persevering. It may involve the seventh or eighth time of persevering before you see God begin to work in their lives. So I want to challenge you this morning that if you know that there is someone who needs your help and the first time you asked them, they said no, ask them again. Yeah. And if you've asked them 5 times, ask them again. Yeah. And if you've asked them 10 times, ask them again. Because we are called to help people. And through that we share the gospel. I want to end with one quote. And I'm going to put this up on the screen for you. I hope you can read that. And this, again, this is from an interview with the real life Leanne and Sean. And it says, if there is one meaning we'd like you to take from our story, it's this. The person you just walked past is the one who could change your life. So every once in a while, stop and turn around. Thank you, church.